And as usual, I'm Fred Lambert, your host of the Electric Podcast, joined by my co-host, Seth Weintraub. Is everything fine on your side, Seth?
I think so. I can see you.
All right. I can see you too. I can hear you. But earlier when we started the broadcast, people couldn't hear us. And now I still don't see the live stream. Do you see the live stream on your side? I'm not sure it went back on the same stream since we started earlier.
Sometimes it takes a couple seconds.
Yeah.
I hit start. There's only two people watching that. So.
Yeah, that doesn't seem right.
Let's go back. The stream says it's going.
But is it going to the same stream that we started earlier since you shut it down when it didn't work? Oh, yeah, it's working now. I can see it. All right. We are back on, though I only see myself. I don't see you on the stream.
All right.
Can anyone hear us? Well, you can hear me. I just saw me, but I don't know about you, Sam.
Back, sort of. Working somewhat now. Bit of a lag. I'm great.
All right. Big
of
a lag, and I don't think they can see you too, Seth. Hopefully they can hear you at least.
I'm okay with that, as long as they can hear both of us.
That's so weird.
We can hear Fred.
All right. We're going to get started anyway. I did explain it earlier, but I think you guys couldn't hear me when I explained it. We used to use Google Hangouts to do these things live on YouTube. And they just shut down the whole product line completely, so it's not usable now. It didn't work great within YouTube and everything, so we had to find an alternative. And you can only hear me. You cannot hear Seth either.
Yeah, I'm adding myself in, I guess.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Let us know if you guys can hear us, Seth. Try Zoom. All right, we're gonna put it on the list, Gary, because this is not working well right now with the Skype alternative. Skype, and we are using OSB. Seth, they cannot hear you, Seth. So,
all right, I'll work on that.
Seth will work on that while he works on it. Seth is very quiet, so I feel like he can hear you just very quietly.
All right, how about now? Is that better?
Oh, and I can also hear you a lot better, so that's probably it.
Okay.
All right, that was it. Okay, so we're going to get started. Anyway, if you're on YouTube, you're just going to have to stare at my dumb faces for the whole thing instead of the alternation between my dumb faces and Seth's dumb faces. All right, wasn't that big of a week in the EV world to start with, but still a cool few things. For Tesla, I think the biggest news was probably the Megapack announcement. That's something that we knew was coming. It wasn't anything big surprise about it, but they are officially launching it. It's the latest N3 in their series of energy storage products. So, of course, there was originally the Powerwall and the Powerpack. Those were updated a few times since. And now they add the Megapack to it, which is up to 3 megawatt-hour storage capacity system with a 1.5 megawatt inverter included in the same system. So it's like a container size, all-in-one included energy storage system that, of course, at up to 3 megawatt-hour is just, it's not for your average an installation, not for like certainly not for a residential project, probably even not for like the average commercial project. It's really more for a grid scale system for an electric utilities to replace some peaker power plants and things like that. And the goal is to put a ton of them together and get an even massive, even bigger energy storage capacity. And one of the first development that So we first reported on that a year ago, about a year ago, when we first heard of the project. And then not long after that, Tesla announced that they secured the contract for the Moss Landing energy storage project with PG&E in California. And a few months after that, Electric obtained the plans for the project. And we could see in the plans that Tesla was planning to use the Megapack for the first time. So that gives us a good example here. Tesla is planning a 1.2 gigawatt hour system with the Megapack at Moss Landing. So it gives you an idea of the scale of the system. And we're talking about over 400 of those container size energy storage system put together, just massive. And with that, with putting more batteries together inside a system like that, Tesla thinks that it's more energy dense and it takes less space too for the Moss Landing. It's still going to take a ton of space because it's just such a massive energy storage project. But you could make like much smaller system too. I mean, 1.2 gigawatt hour is huge. So Tesla didn't release any kind of pricing information because it's more a business-to-business product than anything else. But now it's there, and it's going to accelerate the deployment, I think, of Tesla's energy storage, stationary energy storage a lot. We saw a big increase last quarter for Tesla's energy storage, and we think that that's linked to fixing the battery cell bottleneck that there was a Gigafactory 1 where they needed to use all the cells for Model 3, and they needed to use even some battery module lines that were used for power walls and power pack had to be switched to Model 3 modules. So now it looks like they fixed those problems and they can ramp up stationary energy storage modules production to put in all those different system, Powerwall, Powerpack, and now even the Megapack. Are you excited, Seth, about this product?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they're making it a lot easier for power companies, energy products, instead of throwing together a bunch of power packs. And you mentioned the size, like a gigawatt hour is the equivalent of 10,000 Tesla 100, you know, P100Ds or whatever. So it's a huge, huge kind of project. And to kind of do this with power packs would be kind of a mess. So You can kind of, I guess the size of this thing is about the same size as a shipping container.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, these are the kind of things you could probably put on the back of a truck, easy to transport. They're all boxed up and ready to deploy. So I think this will make these kind of deployments a lot easier. And of course, these are aimed at the, as you mentioned, peaker plants. These are smaller gas-powered plants that come on during like brownout type of periods. You know, in particular, places like South Australia, California are very prone to this. So I think this kind of product in these kind of areas will be very popular with power companies.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think the listeners are still asking for you to crank it up a little bit, the volume. Yeah, all right. I can hear you I can hear you perfectly, so that's I don't get it, but maybe because I hear you just through the Skype and there's something different through the stream with YouTube. We'll see. One other thing that I find interesting is that now we're starting Tesla to see Elon Musk fulfill his promise with the superchargers, and with the deployment of the V3 supercharger station, Tesla is now also deploying energy storage and solar with it. But of course, the argument is always, yeah, but it's not enough. It's barely covers, like it barely scratched the surface of the needs for electricity of a supercharger station, especially a V3 supercharger station. Dropping one of those megapack at every supercharger station would create a lot of value for Tesla, I think. Of course, the places where they can, I mean, it's a big product. Takes supercharger station normally are located in more places that are sometimes space constraints. So I'm not sure if it will work everywhere, but it could work at a lot of places. And now you could shave the inverter is 1.5 megawatt off the peak diamond of a supercharger station. So that would cut down peak charges significantly, like by a lot, and peak charges can cost a lot.
I think they could probably almost entirely remove them because, you know, even at peak on a version 3 supercharger, you're not going to be at that high point the whole time. Like mm-hmm. on a Model 3 at 250 kilowatts, that happens for just a short period of time. And then the cars, you know, kind of go down. So, you know, worst case scenario, Tesla could limit the station to only coming off of the battery. And theoretically, a few of those cars would have to, you know, lower their top speed. But overall, it's going to save the network a ton of money.
Yeah, because if you look at it like the most simplistic way possible, if you need like 10 Model 3s to come out at the same time near empty to reach 2.5 megawatt of demand at the same time. So for the station that are more than 10 stalls, which is most station, but not V3. I mean, the only full V3 station there is now is the one in Vegas that opened last week. And this one has 24 stalls. So it's not impossible, but less likely. But the equivalent of that, of a 2.5 megawatt load, is not impossible at all. Like it's quite possible actually. And you put them, you just shave 1.5 megawatt of that domain, and won't happen a lot, but when it happens, it's gonna rack up quite a bill for Tesla, depending on the kind of deal they have with the local electric utility there.
I mean, Tesla could have settings in such a way that whenever demand hits, they don't take anything from the grid; they only take from the battery. And then, you know, they deplete the battery, and I guess like if it goes all the way down, then they got to take some peak demand, but. You know, I feel like the demand charges are so high that it would be kind of silly for Tesla to take those huge charges versus slowing down charging a little bit for you know, the high end users.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most users aren't even at 100 kilowatts.
Mm-hmm. For most of their charging session, yeah.
Yeah.
And for the times where you don't need it, Tesla could probably still offer the capacity instead inside the mega pack as a grid stabilization asset for the local utility if they can, sort of like a net metering system that they offer for solar. They offer some frequency stabilization services with energy storage, so that could be a possibility to have a different revenue stream for the supercharger station while using the mega pack. So I see a lot of value in the new product. Tesla, I'm sure Tesla is going to find a few ways to. I think they're going to get plenty of demand from utilities in the first place. So maybe it's not going to be a priority to put them at a supercharger station, but I'll keep an eye out for that. The next big news, which arguably is even bigger than Megapack this week, is Elon Musk commenting on the solar roof production rate that they are aiming for. So they're installing capacity at Gigafactory 2 right now to try to reach 1,000 solar roof per week by the end of the year. That is a lot. That is a lot, not just in comparison of what Tesla's already installed, which we believe is just in a few hundreds at best since the product launch 2 years ago. So from that standpoint, it's a lot. But it's the standpoint that from any kind of the way you look at it, if we assume, what was my assumption here? If we assume an average of 8 kilowatt per roof, it would be over 100 megawatt per quarter of solar deployment for Tesla. Last quarter, Tesla deployed 29 megawatt. So the solar roof alone would more than triple Tesla's quarterly installations based on the previous quarter's rate. So that's a lot. And we're only talking about a solar roof here. Tesla would still sell the solar panels retrofit systems, which I would assume would be just as big or bigger of a market than, I mean, most roof in the US don't need to be retrofitted. So it makes more sense for most people to install solar panels than it would to install a whole new roof with solar, I think. If you need a new roof, then that's when solar roof becomes a viable option. But yeah, 100 megawatts would be, and at the price of a solar roof, which we've seen is, I don't think I've seen anything for less than $65,000, and I've seen a bunch of them like $85,000 and more. It's basically the cost of a Model S, and Tesla produce fewer than 1,000 Model S per week. So solar roof would, by the end of the year, would be a bigger product for Tesla than the Model S.
I mean, as far as revenue streams, maybe not as far as profit, but
that's,
you know, revenue it would certainly be a big number. Mm-hmm. Although I have to say it does sound like a little bit ambiguous, as in roof. It's weird that they said roofs and not like, you know, how many megawatt solar panels. I mean, a roof can be a small, you know, like it can be like a 1 kilowatt roof, I guess. We saw that one that they did in 24 hours, and that was a pretty small roof, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, it doesn't make much sense. You're right. I mean, it's easier for the average person to understand, like it's just a roof, but especially what's the mix, because we know that a roof is, there's a mix of solar tiles and non-solar tiles, so it's very ambiguous, right? But any way you look at it, they're preparing for a very high production rate. And we also learned this week that Tesla is looking to build a structure and the Fremont factory to install and test the solar roof tiles themselves, but also the installation of the solar roof tiles, because that's a big part of the deployment. I'm not that much concerned about them being able to produce enough roof tiles to make 1,000 roof per week on the production side. But the last time we heard, which was earlier this year, an average solar roof installation still took about 2 weeks. So,
which is crazy.
Yeah.
Usually a Solar City roof is a 2-day project at most.
Yeah. And an average, well, of course, it's much bigger to do a real roof than just installing the solar panels. Right. So if you compare to a whole roof, that's normally in the tile roof, that's 5 to 7 days. So it's still about twice as long as an average roof. So there's a lot of work here. I mean, every week you're going to produce like years work of labor work for the installation team of production if you sell all those. So you're going to need either a giant installation team, like giant, or you need to figure out a way to reduce the labor time for installing one of those solar roofs. So it looks like they're going to test some installation technique with this structure that's going to come up in Fremont Factory. They obtained the permit last month. And they're also going to test, of course, the product itself. And there's been talk. I mean, I think it was at the shareholders meeting. Elon said that they had some issue. One of the things that delayed the solar roof is that they had issue testing the longevity of the roof, which I get. I mean, some accelerated aging testing, they call it. That's that has to be complicated when you want to do it on a 30-year period, which I think that's what they're aiming for. Yeah, they were aiming for 30 years, so not an easy thing to test for. All right, more of a service announcement and then news itself. One owner found a bug with Tesla Dock Mode. For those who don't know, Tesla Dock Mode is the way that Tesla maintained the climate control inside the car so that you can leave a pet inside the vehicle. And there's also an image that displays on the center screen that shows the temperature inside the car. So any passerby that see a dog in a car in the sun doesn't panic and see that the dog is fine. The owner found that it was an issue that if you're not on the auto climate control, if you are you, for whatever reason, manually change the fan speed instead of leaving it to auto. Even if you activate dock mode, apparently it doesn't work. So important to know for owners, if you leave your dog in the car, you don't realize that dock mode is not activating. And Elon's quickly said he's going to fix it. And I just got a confirmation from Tesla saying that they started to roll out that fix today. So that's the good news. Quick fix, less than 2 days, I think. Though that still needs to roll out, so you still need to get that software update. So still be on the lookout for that bug or whatever you want to call it. You should get the fix in their next update or so. All right, moving on from Tesla. Audi had quite the announcement this week. They unveil a cheaper version of the e-tron electric SUV with a smaller battery pack and a few modifications. They are calling it the e-tron 50. And I guess the current e-tron is not the e-tron 55, but since it was the only variant, like, we didn't really call it anything, which is the e-tron. This new e-tron 50 comes with a 71 kilowatt hour battery pack compared to the 95 kilowatt hour battery pack of the main version. It's about 120 kilograms, 265 pound lighter. Okay, now here's the thing. Audi told us that they don't plan to launch that car in North America. So it was only a release for Europe. And they didn't explain why exactly, but we do have an idea why. But in term, I specify that because of the range ratings that they advertise for it. In Europe, they're using now the WLTP standard, which, as we know, is much more optimistic than, well, not as much optimistic as the previous one, the NEDC, but it's still more optimistic than the EPA range, which we think is a little bit, at least, it is closer to real world range. The 95 kilowatt hour version of the Audi e-tron was getting 248 miles of range, 299 kilometers. Of course, we know it to be closer to 200 miles of range due to our own testing and the EPA rated range, which is 204. So that doesn't make sense here. But for your point of comparison, the WLTP for the new 71 kilowatt hour battery pack is 186 miles. That's 299 kilometers. So based on that, should be a lot shorter. I mean, I'd be surprised.
150.
Yeah, I'd be even surprised by 150. Like, would that be good, I think, for that? Because we know it's just not that efficient of a car. Maybe those 260 pounds make a big difference. I don't think that's the biggest factor, but it will make a little difference.
But so. Getting, you know, skipping ahead, your point is that why would Audi make such a car? 150 miles isn't that great of a product. I think the reason is kind of like what Tesla did in Canada, they're doing in Germany, where you have to have a lower priced car to kind of squeak under the tax incentive. Is that right? Is that what we're thinking?
Well, in the release itself that they sent in European market, they do mention, oh, by the way, because they didn't confirm the price yet, so we don't know exactly, but they did say in Germany it would be below 70,000 euros, which would give them access to the EV incentive. So for it's for sure part of the plan for that. However, there's other things too. I mean, first of all, so you could argue that up. That it's a compliance car because they're not launching it in the US. I mean, I also think that they are launching just in Europe because in Europe they can advertise with the WLTP standard, and it hurts less to advertise with 186 mile than advertising whatever is going to be the cost of that car. Like in the US, it would be what, like maybe like $65,000 that car? A $65,000 car that you're going to have to advertise with something around 150 miles of range. That's
a painful.
Oh, hard sell. Very right. Hard sell. So that's probably also why they're not bringing that car here. I mean, it sounds like they're bringing it all over Europe. So not just in Germany. And so far, I think Germany is the main market that makes a difference for the incentive. So I wouldn't necessarily call it the compliance car. I think that plays a bigger role. Number two, the other thing too that could play a role into this is cell supply. Of course, you need fewer cell per car if you have a smaller battery pack. And we hear that Audi's is cell constrained with the production of the e-tron. They cannot get that many cells from, I think it's LG that's supplying them. So that would be a way for them to be able to produce more cars with the same amount of cells. And in Germany, it could make sense in Germany if, I think it's what, 4,000 euros or something? 4,000 euros, you manage to reduce the price by another, what, 10,000 euros with the battery pack. So maybe some people would like it. I mean, 86 miles, well, really 150 miles, 300 kilometers. It's still good for a city car. I mean, you're going to have a tough time do a long distance road trip with this, but.
Yeah, places in Europe are closer together. So maybe that.
That too.
Part of it. Maybe that's just a testing ground for them.
Though I feel like Germany, they do a lot of longer distances thanks to the Autobahn. So.
And at high speeds as well. Yeah. So forget about that 150 miles. You're probably going to get like 80 miles.
Yeah.
200 kilometers.
Yeah. It's the range is not the only thing that changed with the smaller battery pack. They also say that the charge rate has been reduced. It went from, they advertised a charge rate for 150 for the full battery pack, but we know that it can actually go up to 155. And they actually managed to maintain that through pretty deep inside the cycle, so that's good. But now they say that the new 71 kilowatt hour version is going to top off at 120. Hopefully it can maintain it 120 for a long time like they do 155. Do you hear something?
Yeah, I get it too. Stop.
I think it's my upstairs neighbor's central vacuum cleaner or something like that. I think it's
that. Oh, man.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Not having a good day with the podcast.
Yep. Not a good day for the video, and now the audio is also compromised. Not great. Though the people on the stream say that the audio is also not great, so I don't know. I thought that at least the audio listeners of this podcast, this episode would be fine, but no, you two are getting it this week. My apologies. All right, so they said that this thing is going to launch later this year in Europe. The charging speed lowered and the total power output also lowered. It went from 400 horsepower to about 300 horsepower, about 230 kilowatts of full output. It's been a little bit reduced, so your acceleration, your top speed is also going to be a little bit limited. Yeah. I'm supposed to get an e-tron for a full review. We did a few test drives, and I like the car a lot. Other than the fact that it's not that efficient for an electric car, I liked everything else. It's a solid SUV, solid premium SUV otherwise. So, but since my problem was already with the efficiency and the range, and this one doesn't fix that, it makes it worse. just for saving some money. Unless your lifestyle, the way you already drive your car, like you're someone who just don't like driving long distances, you'll find another way. You prefer like hitching a ride or taking a plane or taking the train, then maybe that new version will work for you. Otherwise, I just don't see it much. I know. All right. Porsche announced 30,000 taken reservation. Sounds weird. 30,000 reservation for the Taycan, their upcoming electric car. That's going to, we're in August now. So it's going to be released next month. Next month, we're going to see the Taycan. The production version, I mean. You excited, Seth?
Yes, I am.
It's going to be a cool car.
It is a very cool car.
Earlier this year, they said that they were over 20,000. Now they said 30,000. And
35,000, right?
They said 30,000.
Okay.
2,500 is the deposit that they require. So people are very interested in that car because they are putting down $2,500 to get that reservation. It's refundable, but still, I mean, it shows interest for it. I mean, it shows interest for a Porsche electric car. They started taking reservation for the ID3. I don't think the ID3 is at 30,000 yet. Last time we heard, I think it was 24,000 or something. For the ID3, which is going to be a much cheaper car, of course.
Right. And people don't really put down reservations for
that's a good point.
Volkswagen Golf type cars.
Yeah. And to be fair, they also had a much shorter time to get a reservation. I think they just started a few months ago while the Porsche has been accumulating reservation for a while now for the take-in, maybe 2 years almost. And I think they're also limited on the markets for the ID3. I think the ID3 is only like a few European market. They are not even the whole of Europe. And of course, it's not even going to be available in North America. Porsche is, the Taycan is going to be available. So, but still, there's a reason to get excited for the Taycan. I cannot wait to drive that car. I want to test it. I want to, especially this, and they said that you can like maintain the power output for a while. So I'm sure that the, maybe we can get some Autobahn time on it or something like that. It's going to be fun. All right. We got to see a few new prototype electric cars this week. And one of them looks like it's actually going to production. Human Horizons. Horizons, plural. Human Horizons. You guessed it. A Chinese EV startup. That's where all the electric cars are coming from. I'm going to check it out, by the way. Just confirm a trip to China for next month. We're going to check out, not this one specifically, though, well, maybe I'll try because I extended my trip a few days to be able to meet other Chinese company and just see what some of those cars, because some of them looks insane. And this one is definitely one of those that looks insane. The Human Horizon Hi-Fi? I don't know. HIPHI 1. Apparently, they are well funded.
But we have heard well funded before, and it doesn't always turn out great. So that by itself isn't going to get them anywhere.
Yeah. Though they did something that I liked, like they only unveiled the car now, they unveiled the HIFI 1. After having a factory ready to, well, maybe not ready to build it, but they already have a place to build it. They bought back a factory from Kia, a Chinese joint venture. So it's a factory that was producing cars, and now they are in the process of converting it to electric car production. And they're going to produce that car there, which looks like some kind of premium SUV, a mix of Model S and X at the same time. Like, it's not that high. It looks like almost a sedan, but it has the third row and it doesn't have Falcon wing doors, but it has suicide doors in the back doors, the top opens up like a Goldwing door, but it's basically just a roof door because you can also operate the passenger door as a suicide, well, I wasn't going to say normal door, but it's a suicide door still. And the inside, from the inside, you have like the center screen that looks a lot like a Model S, Model X screen with the vertical one. And you also have a giant screen for the passenger too, like just for the passenger, basically, because the driver doesn't even see it because the center screen blocks the passenger screen. But you have a huge screen as a passenger. So you can play with that. They didn't get into details about the specs more than that. They're going to offer a variety of different powertrains for the car. And the max battery pack option is going to be 96 kilowatt hour. And they say it's going to get up to 400 miles of range with that 96 kilowatt hour, which I, of course, doubt a lot. In China, I think they still use mostly the NEDC standard, right? When they talk about range.
They don't have their own.
Yeah, so. I mean, even for the NEDC, 400 miles of range on 96 kilowatt hour is pretty high, but I don't know, maybe. 0 to 62 miles per hour, 100 kilometers in 3.9 seconds. So it's going to be like a premium car. performance vehicle, and they're going to start production in 2021. That's what they're aiming for. So that's a one new crazy prototype EV that we saw this week. We just reported earlier today on another one, Fresco Motors. And you guessed it, it's actually not China. This one is coming from Norway. I mean, we hear of Norway all the time about EVs for their adoption rate. Like, Norway loves EVs. They buy a ton of them. They have very good incentive for them. And they are by far the world's leader in electric vehicle adoption, but they don't produce any of them. And Fresco Motors want to change that. I mean, if there's a lot of demand in Norway for EVs, there should be a lot of demand in Norway for Norwegian EVs. And they unveil a bunch of computer animated produced generated images, and they release specs. I don't think that they have a working prototype or anything like that. I think they just like they're developing something and they wanted to start to generate some hype for it. And I mean, we just posted them on Electric. You can check them out, the pictures. I think there's something wrong with it. But of course, it is computer generated, so it always looks something off. But I posted it in the room and asked, like, well, what do you think it is? And you had a good point about it that I cannot unsee. And also Michael, one of our editors, also had a good point. Michael said that it looks a little bit like it has a Chrysler 300 feel. And I mean, you cannot look at the front end. Doesn't that look anything like a Chrysler? But I do see the proportion of it. Like it looks very similar to the nice Chrysler 300. It is a nice car. Yeah, for sure. But Seth also had a good point with the original Model S prototype, right?
A nice rounded front, even though it had the what do you call that? Nose cone. That's always been my favorite Model S. I think that just has kind of a more interesting look than the Model S sedan that came out, and then the updated fascia. Both great looking cars, but I still think that original front end prototype of Model S is the best. Maybe the best car Tesla ever so far produced. Never mind. The Roadster is probably a lot better than that. So I take that back. But up until the new Roadster,
yeah,
I would say that.
Well, if we stick to the Model S, the latest Model S with the new front end and everything, you think that looks worse than the original prototype?
I'm not a fan of nose cones, generally speaking, but I just love the rounded front end. It reminded me of not a Miata, I guess, but there was a Pontiac Solstice or something like that that had a really nice rounded front. Well,
do you guess who designed the Pontiac Solstice?
Yeah,
Franz Bellinghausen. Yeah,
I knew that.
You know what? It reminded me more of like a Fisker type of design, the original prototype, than anything. I actually like more, I think, the latest. Well, then if you remove the nose cone on the prototype, maybe I'd like it more than the current one. I'm not sure. But yeah, I can see it definitely on the front end here if there's a similarity there. In terms of dimension, it's actually right between the Model S and the Model 3. So they know what they're doing here. It's two very popular cars in Norway. And in terms of specs, now that's where it gets a little bit shady. Because the range, they don't disclose it. They just say that you're not going to have any range anxiety. All right? I already don't have any range anxiety in my electric cars, but okay. And some people are going to have range anxiety with different ranges, different potential for distances. But, okay. Acceleration from 0 to 100 kilometers per hour, so that's 6.2 miles per hour, in just 2 seconds, flat. Top speed, 300 kilometers per hour, 186 miles per hour. They achieved that higher top speed with a 4-speed automatic gearbox with something called overdrive. That's rare that you see different speeds on the electric motor. They're using an AC induction motor. They didn't disclose the power output for it, but it's gonna have to be crazy to do a 2 seconds 0-62, and you're gonna have to have some good traction too. I don't really see it for a sedan that size, really. I doubt it. They're gonna have a few other like weird features too. I mean, wireless charger. Well, that's not that weird, but it is kind of weird because you don't really need it. It's solving a problem that doesn't exist. Like plugging in your car is not that big of an issue. Like, but all right, it's like a fun thing to have. Jerry cans, like portable batteries. They say that they're basically jealous of the owners of cars with internal combustion engine because they can just carry around jerry cans full of gasoline. They wanted to do the same thing for the car. I actually have seen that before. I've seen a startup working on that. Like they had a prototype they wanted to send me. They never did. But it was basically a battery pack that you could put in the back of your car with a G1772 connector on it. And you can just plug that in and charge your, just top off your car with, I think it was like 2 kilowatt hours maybe. But then you're traveling around with however that thing weighted was probably like 50 pounds or something, so, more weight that you wouldn't really need most of the time. But I don't know, if you're someone who worries about that stuff, maybe it's a good idea. So they want to do something like that, but that comes standard with a car or something. I don't put a lot of stock on it. I think it's all vaporware for now, but just maybe, I think it was most interesting because it's Norway. Like Norway might actually have an EV automaker. It could be fun. All right. Speaking of solving a problem that doesn't really exist, Electrify America is deploying some autonomous fast charging station with robot arms. To be fair, they do say it's for self-driving fleets, so they're preparing for when they are self-driving cars, then you could use it. So it's not like they want to do that for their average station just because people have been complaining about having to get out of the car and plug in. We've seen a bunch of projects like that. I saw a few German companies working on it, posting some prototypes last year. Of course, Tesla, way back when, had the robot snake, middle snake charger thing that plugged in automatically. They never did anything with that. This is a more like simple version of that. Instead of being an actual like snake-like with the cable inside, it's just your average commercial robot arm, and they connect the cable to it, and the thing has a camera, and they can see where it needs to plug in, and just bloop, plug it in. They want to deploy that, have it operational by the end of, early in 2020, and it's going to be in San Francisco. Which is smart because they already have like fleets of self-driving car there. Well, not exactly self-driving, but all the prototypes fleet, like Cruise has a big fleet there. GM has Cruise. Who else is testing there?
Apple is, apparently.
Who else is testing? Apple is testing there, yeah. But I think Cruise has the biggest fleet right now. And so they could probably... And Cruise use the Bolt EV, so they could charge there at the station. Could be cool. It's more like preparing for the future, really, of course, than anything else. All right. Lastly, we also have something that it's interesting to discuss, because especially here in our electric bubble, where we think that everybody knows about electric cars, there's still a big awareness and education problem with electric car, and that was highlighted in a new study that came out from J.D. Power this week. They partner with SurveyMonkey to start a new index. They called it the Mobility Confidence Index, and there's two parts to it. There's confidence into self-driving vehicles and confidence into battery electric vehicles. Won't spend too much time on self-driving. I think it's a little bit premature, like to check the confidence on self-driving cars when there's just no self-driving cars available out there. So, the score was 36 out of 100 for self-driving cars, which is surprisingly high for me because like no one has ever been in a self-driving car really. Like you use autopilot, that's not self-driving. That's driver assist, a fully self-driving car. I mean, Waymo did some things. with customers directly, like some but very limited and stuff like that. So I think it will go way up once someone has an actual commercial product. But for battery electric vehicle, I think more interesting because, of course, we are very interested in the adoption of the technology, and it's been around for decades, really, and more intensively in the last decade. And it's still got only a 55 out of 100, and that's a mix of different scores. If we go into the more like specifics here, a few things that jump that became obvious to me that kind of weird. 61% of the respondents said that electric vehicles are better for the environment than other cars, which means that
education is low.
Almost one of the three people thinks that electric cars in the U.S. are worse for the environment than gasoline vehicles. And I think that stems from, of course, the propaganda about you have an electric car, then you're just burning coal instead of burning gasoline, which is true to a degree in different states, but plenty of studies looking at the full cradle to grave. The full life cycle, cradle to grave, of gasoline versus and gasoline, including all the refineries that goes into burning gasolines and everything like that. And on the electric car side, on the battery and the electricity side of it. And in every state now, it's better for the environment. You emit fewer emission if you're driving electric than you're driving a gasoline car. And that's only getting better too, because the mix of renewable energy in the grid in the U.S. and around the world is getting better. There's just solar and wind and hydro and geothermal, the fastest growing source of power. So more is coming online on the grid, the cleaner it is to charge on the grid. So that's something that we need to dispel exactly there. So that's 39% of the population that we could convince there that would change their view on EVs. But some other things here. Two-thirds of the respondents, 68%, said that they have no experience with an electric car, and that means they've never even been in one. So not only they've never driven one, they've never been driven in one. So that's right. They're also a big opportunity. We just get more people inside the cars. I mean, there's no better way to sell a car, like especially like one a Tesla, to get someone in it. I think everyone that's driven my Tesla has one in one after. I don't remember anyone that, and I let anyone drive my car. I go pick up someone, I go in the passenger seat right away, and like, you want to drive? Because like people say, it's the best way to convince people to go electric. And everyone finishes the drive and say, yeah, okay, what's the price again? Like they try to figure it out, and okay, right. I need to sell that to my wife and whatnot.
How many referrals you have these days?
But, boy, I've never checked. I don't think a referral means anything for me anymore. Yeah, they don't make any difference.
That's...
Yeah, if that's really happening. Is anyone winning a Model Y? Tesla says that they are raffling those Model Y, but we've never heard anything about it. I'm not sure that they're doing one. And on the supercharger side of things, they're not giving me the supercharger. It's not piling up. I know that for you, it's piling up.
Supercharger?
That's the thing. I've never been charged too for my. It says that my Model 3 is on, is not on the free supercharging, but I've never seen it charged. So I don't know, but I don't see on your system. You showed me last time that you're accumulating those free supercharging miles. I don't see it on mine. But just for the sake of it, on the latest version of the program, I have 116 referral delivered. And how many ordered? 37 on order right now. So over 150. That's since May or something. Yeah, I had over 200 for the last one too. So I'm probably closing in on
total
400 or something. 400. Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, it should be an easy product to sell. Of course, it's not for everyone yet in terms of price and in terms of different models available. I know that some people need minivans and some people need pickup trucks. So those
need is a strong word, electric, but people strongly prefer these different form factors. Yeah. I have a friend who has two kids and he needs a third row. And I'm like, you don't really need a third row. And he's like, well, I'd feel better about having a third row. Mm. So I can't get a Tesla. Well, I mean, you could get a Model X, but he doesn't have the budget for that. But I kind of recommended the Kona or the Bolt. And he said those are way too small. So.
Yeah, that's the thing. Everyone, when I say when they ask what you do for a living, I say I work with electric vehicles. I report on electric cars and everything like that. I test them and whatnot. They always say, what's the best to buy right now? And you always ask, what's the best electric car to buy right now? I mean, then you feel bad about saying it's a Tesla because it's so expensive. And you're like, all right, it's a Tesla. Oh, you cannot afford a Tesla. I'm like, all right, then I know. And then you go to the second best car that you can still buy those cars. They're still great cars. But you ask me which one is the best. It is a Tesla. But I know you probably cannot afford it. So then you have to say you're going to go with the second best. And like people are not like happy with that. But if you're asking me what's the best gasoline car to buy right now, I'm gonna tell you a car that you cannot afford either. Right. So I don't know why people have a different reaction to it when it's an electric car.
What is the best if you had to recommend somebody to get a non-Tesla car, both budget and not budget? What would you recommend?
Well, budget. I mean, it also depends on where we are and everything like that because. I mean, now here we're getting a bunch of Kona EVs, which I probably recommend here. But if I'm somewhere like in California, I think a lot of people in California right now should look into getting one of those deals on a Bolt EV lease.
Bolt is a nice car. I think that was probably next to the EV1, probably General Motors' biggest, like they had it and they blew it kind of thing. I mean, the Bolt is a fantastic electric vehicle.
To be clear, it's a lease, though. I'm not saying buy it. I wouldn't recommend buying a Bolt EV right now. It's definitely
going to depreciate in value because a lot of other EVs are coming. But like for when I got mine, which was 2017, it was, you know, it's got a ton of range. It had relatively fast charging, although now it's, you know, it's nothing. It's speedy. It's got a lot of space. It's very reliable. I mean, but the problem is they didn't fix anything. Over the 3 years, like still has the same crappy seats, still has like the tires.
It should just have faster charging. Yeah, that's the main one. You should figure out faster charging.
You can easily do it because it can regen up to 70 kilowatts. So if you're on the highway and you hit the paddle and you're regening as hard as you can, you're getting 70 kilowatts of regen. So if it can regen at 70 kilowatts, it sure could charge at 70 kilowatts. And, you know,
at the battery level, it might be another bottleneck somewhere. But also, when it came out in 2017, there was nothing other than the Tesla Supercharger. There was nothing over 50 kilowatts. So they just said, okay, we just do 50 kilowatt then. But of course, the whole EV infrastructure market changed over the last 2 years. But GM didn't change the Bolt EV in the last 2 years.
Kilowatts for quite a bit of time. So, you know, it's a little bit better, but. You know, it's nothing compared to a Model 3. You know, we're actually taking the Bolt up to Vermont this weekend and, we're gonna spend a lot of time at the charging station.
What are you taking up? You have a Model X?
I don't know. We've got a lease on the Model X and the Bolt. The Model X has like 30,000 miles on it, and we have like 3,000 miles left before we go over. And the Bolt has like 16,000 miles on it. So we have like 14,000 miles left on the Bolt and 3,000 miles left on.
Oh, it's a lease, the Bolt, too. You have a lease on it. No, okay, I thought you bought the Bolt. Yeah, the Model 2, I know you have. And, so coming back to the lease, I don't know how much you paid in New York, but I know that in California and some places now, like they have some crazy deal where you can get away with a Bolt with just a few thousand dollars cash down and $200. Sometimes I've seen less than $200 a month. So when you take that and you take your gas, if you're coming off of a gasoline car, you take your gas saving into account, it makes a ton of sense for a lot of people. You'll save money quick. And you get, like you said, it's still a fun car. More fun than most gasoline car for that price range.
It seemed like fairly entertaining.
Yeah, that was a ton of fun. Oh, yeah. That was my first experience with autocross, and still got some good times.
Yeah.
Competitive times. Yeah, if you have an entry car out there, people, don't be shy about letting people drive it, and it's gonna help EV adoption very quick, I think. That's pretty much it for us this week, guys. Thanks a lot for listening. Thanks a lot for
hanging with
working
us there
through our audio and video. Yeah. Our audio and video issues, and next week we'll hopefully have that fixed. Also, we were a little bit earlier this week. It's my birthday. I'm going leaving early. Thank you. Thank you, guys. I'm hearing the happy birthdays coming from online. Thank you. So next week we should be back at the same time, not 4 p.m., 1 p.m., 4 p.m. Eastern time, 1 p.m. Pacific time. All right. Talk to you next time.